Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Am I wrong for thinking of the box from where I stay? Am I wrong for saying that I choose another way?
Good evening one more time here on the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 63 in the summer heat.
Man, we're just moving right along. And of course, you've had some fantastic, you had a fantastic weekend, Sean, up there at the Hydros off the Columbia this weekend. How did that go?
The 2014 Columbia Cup, another edition came and went. And once again, oh boy, Oberto and driver Jimmy Shane taking home the Columbia Cup. He has won two races in a row now, and he is the high points leader for the season for the Unlimited Hydros.
Man, that has to be exciting. And I know up there in the Pacific Northwest, great time of the year to actually see the Hydros. Big weekend. I'm sure the weather was nice, probably about in the 90s up there for the Columbia Cup.
Oh, definitely pushing triple digits and exceeding that here the next few days. And it was a great day also for a guest of ours last week. Y19 1 liter driver Josh Culver out of Pasco ended up winning first place in the 1 liter division.
So what are you saying? To be a guest on the show first if you want to go and partake in a championship?
Well, hey, it worked well for Josh yesterday on the Columbia River.
Awesome stuff for Josh. And, of course, Josh being on the show last week and, you know, giving some insight on what it's like to race in the Hydros. And, man, it's got to be exciting. Of course, they'll be heading up to I know that the Unlimiteds will be heading up next week for a big race up in Seafair. Is that next week or?
Absolutely. Seattle, yes. Seafair on Lake Washington the week after the Columbia Cup. And, man, we had a little bit of everything yesterday, and you can find a lot of this on YouTube and other various online sources of boats crashing into each other. In fact, the Oh Boy Oberto had a hole in it because he was ran into yesterday but was able to stay on the river. And there was also a flip to start the first final heat.
Jeez.
The Lake Ridge paving flipped, and that boat was sinking. They couldn't pull it out of the water till after all the races were done.
So they call themselves hydroplanes, right? And, you know, the only thing that I could relate that to as far as a plane is concerned, Sean Wally, is going through massive turbulence. I mean, because as fast as they're going, and, you know, let's face it, Columbia River is a wide river, and it whitecaps quite a bit. So I can imagine, you know, the amount of rattling and shaking that goes on when you're driving a hydroplane has to be intense.
Well, hearing from the drivers yesterday, they were saying it was glass-like out there on the Columbia, one of the best days they've ever had racing on the Columbia River as far as conditions.
Well, you know, from some of the pictures and videos that you're sending, it seemed like a great weekend. And so I'm sure those guys were out having fun doing what they do. But, of course, you don't like to hear of people flipping, but at the same time, you know, that brings that element of excitement to hydro racing, and just as long as everybody's okay in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. There weren't any major injuries to report at all. I think all drivers that were involved in collisions or the one flip were just fine, so that's the good news. And yeah, another summer in the Tri-Cities moves on, and we've got a 2014 champion of the Columbia Cup.
Well, man, there's also been an exciting week, 1 week under the belts for the NFL season, Sean Wally. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, the Super Bowl champions are chomping at the bit to get things kicked off. And, you know, sounds like an exciting week up there in Renton, the headquarters of the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, things are going off as planned for those champs.
Well, with the one exception of number 24 missing in action, and he has not reported, that being Marshawn Lynch, and so his wallet is getting lighter by the day.
Yeah, you know, there's sightings of Marshawn being down here in Sacramento doing some things for the kids, making sure that he's staying in the limelight as far as helping the public, the general public. And so I, you know, I know that he'll eventually make the right decision, what's best for him. You know, I'm just hoping that, you know, he puts himself back in the situation to play with the Hawks, you know, so that they can be at full strength when the season starts.
Yeah, and right now it looks like the team is holding to their guns and saying, look, you signed your deal. It was only 2 years ago. A contract's a contract. Get in here. Now, the interesting thing is the team can waive the daily fees, the money he should be losing each and every day. They can waive that. They can't waive some of it, like if he misses games, or they can take percentages of his signing bonus back away from him if they choose to. But the actual daily, like right now, it's $30,000 per day, and that goes up tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see what the team and Lynch work out, if anything.
Yeah, you know, I know that both sides right now are posturing themselves to get the deal that they want. You know, I think cooler heads will prevail after a while, and, you know, I believe that Marshawn will definitely be in camp, you know, at some point. And you know, I think he's game ready. I believe he's, you know, ready for the first game of the season. So, you know, we'll see how this one pans out. It's not looking good right now, but something tells me things will end up looking right in the end. On the other side of the, on another note, here in San Francisco or in the Bay Area, there's also some things going on in camp with the 49ers. Of course, you know, new Levi Stadium just opening up, and lots of fans have been coming in to take a look at the stadium and are, you know, very excited about that part of football. But there have been some key injuries going on the 49ers front. Kendall Hunter, running back, along with LaMichael James, also having injuries in camp. And so it doesn't look like they're going to be ready, you know, for the first game of the season. And so actually, as a matter of fact, Kendall Hunter might be out for the season with a torn ACL. So, you know, that is not looking good for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, definitely not a good omen to start training camp, as just the first weekend has passed. And it might be an opportunity for the lesser-known running backs in the San Francisco system to get a shot, because you know they're not going to run with Frank Gore full speed every day in training camp and every game in the preseason.
No, you know, of course, Frank is getting up in age there. And you know, they're definitely – I believe the San Francisco 49ers have a strong stable of running backs. And so, you know, it just depends on how LaMichael James, you know, heals and if he can get a chance to get himself back in. Of course, they have the young man from South Carolina a couple of years ago that is, gosh, I don't know why his name is skipping me. Sean, help me out. But, yeah, he should be ready to go this year and ready to play as well.
Yeah, and then, Sean, across the bay there in Oakland with your Raiders, they have an injury that they didn't want to hear about right now, and that's Rod Streeter at receiver with a concussion.
Yeah, so, you know, Rod took a big hit at the end of practice. I believe that was on Sunday. You know, these guys have been playing with a lot of fervor. There's a lot of excitement going on, and you know, they're expecting some great things in Alameda. And so Rod just went up to make a nice catch and took a hit, and you know, now he has a concussion, probably be out for a couple of days or so. As you were saying, you know, Rod Streeter is, you know, the Raiders' leading receiver last year with about 887 yards of receiving. You know, he was a top receiver, so no 1,000-yard receivers for Oakland. No surprise. But he is the top receiver, and, of course, you know, he's taking an injury. Of course, DJ Hayden being injured as well. And so Reggie McKenzie believes that DJ Hayden will recover and might be back for the first week. But these are crucial times for Oakland, especially when you're looking at the cornerback position, DB position. You know, they want to be at full strength. And, you know, it just seems like DJ Hayden always finds himself in this position, but hopefully he'll be ready to go by the beginning of the season as well.
We've got the next 6 months to talk football. Let's go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and talk a little basketball with big-time guest number one tonight, and that is professional basketball player Brandon Hogg. Brandon, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, how's it going? I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, thanks, Brandon, for being on the show, man. Of course, you know, strong basketball ties. That you were down in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and Tell us a little bit on how that went for you.
Well, you know, in the off season, after you come back to the States, you know, guys get a chance to get a little bit more exposure in Vegas, and the month of July is really big outlet for the basketball players to showcase their skills. And I linked up with a guy named Daryl Reshaw. He's throwing an outstanding event called Global Basketball out there in Las Vegas. And it was just a great overall experience. You know, a lot of talent coming in from all different types of states and different types of colleges, and guys just lacing them up, you know, not knowing each other, and basically just trying to chase their dreams. And that's the name of the game once you leave college, you know, just trying to chase your dreams and ambition, and just putting it all out there, you know, just wanting the best, what you've been working for.
And so, Brandon, you come from a strong basketball background, Edwardsville, Indiana, of course, going to Southern Indiana, a strong conference that you came from, and you can explain that, the Great Lakes Valley Conference. Man, 16 teams in the conference spread between East and West, and you guys dominated from the tenure that you're there, that you were there, and still doing good as we speak, coming up this year.
Yeah. The USI is known as a powerhouse. I knew that coming out of high school. Powerhouse D2 has great players every year, great coaching, and it's just a traditional, you know, winning program. So once you incorporate that, you know, you guys always have successful years. So we're known to send guys at the pros, and the Great Lakes Valley is one of the best D2 programs that they say overall. So it's just hard going coming out of there. We usually have at least 5 teams in the top 10 overall ranked in the top 10 D2. So it's a great competition, and it gets you ready for the next level, which is the pro level.
Now, Brandon, what was that transition like to going from the college game to figuring out what your next step was and getting that opportunity in Germany?
It was rough, you know, at first, because it's a mental game. You know, coming out of college, you know, everything's handed to you, and basically you have to go out and work for it, and you have to go fight for a job. And that's the name of the game in and out every year, is fighting for a job, showcasing your skills in Vegas. You know, I was fortunate to be contacted by an agent with a job opportunity over in Germany, and that's what I've been working out for, that's what I've been praying for, and I took the opportunity, went out there, and, you know, had a successful first season, and just adapting to the overall lifestyle of basketball. You know, it's different once you step off that plane, you know, different culture, different language, and it's a different style of basketball over there. So just adapting and maturing and becoming a student of the game, and just, you know, just become a student of the game and learning it. It's exciting. I just love the game.
Brandon Hogg joining us. You're going to a country I assume you've never been to, and all of a sudden you're there, you're planning to work and to work on your game and learn, but you don't know anybody, you don't know the culture and even the way that they play basketball.
Yeah, it's a step out on faith, and you know, I'm a believer in God, and I just know any situation he put me out, you know, he's bringing me out of as well. So I just went over there, man, and it didn't hit me until I got off the plane and got surrounded by those signs. I didn't understand anything I was looking at. And for the first time meeting my manager that I really had no idea about or knew as a person. And, well, they do a good job of opening their arms and, you know, bringing you in as their own. And it's pretty understood from the gate that you're their American for whatever team you're playing for, the town, the fans, and everybody. You got fans adding you on Facebook already, you know, messaging you and welcome you in. So they try to make it as most homegoing and welcome as they can as possible. But overall, it's gonna be a battle. You know, you're leaving the States. It's a different country and a different language barrier. The food is different. I know throughout the first 3 weeks right off the plane, I probably lost about 15 pounds just, you know, just not being used to eating their food. And, you know, just I'm not a big cook. So it's just an overall maturing experience. You know, the game's different. They have different rules compared to our rules in the States, and different basketballs, and just becoming, I heard a guy say that basketball is like another language, even though you guys don't speak it. You know, once that ball's on the court and those guys, you can lock eyes and understand that basketball is a language in itself, and that's kind of what I went off of. Once those guys understood that I knew the game, you know, they worked around me, they tried their best to make me feel comfortable, and we came together, and we had a successful season.
Brandon Hogg joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And, you know, Brandon, I want to go back a little bit to your collegiate days. And, of course, you know, you have a strong pedigree. You're a 6'1 guard, you know, very savvy, quick in getting to the hole. You know, you were coached by Rodney Watson, who had just a tremendous tenure, who's still there at Southern Indiana, I believe. But his record's 120-30 with, like, it's an 80%. 800, you know, batting 800 pretty much, you know, as a coach. Kind of give us an idea on your adjustments, you know, playing in college, playing Division II, and then trying to make it, as you're saying, moving forward, going to play in Europe, and still climbing that ladder to make it to the Holy Grail, which is the NBA.
Yeah, it was a big transition for me coming out of high school. You know, you're coming out with your chest up and thinking that you're the best, and then reality sets in when you come up there and the other 15 guys comes in and they have their awards too. They're all staters and not everybody's freshmen. You know, I walked into a situation where our starting point guard was 28 years old at the time. So here I am, 18 years old, battling for a 28-year-old point guard position. And it just hits you, you know, it hits you right in the face, right out the gate that, you know, certain guys are going to make you work for it. And, I was just fortunate. You know, if you look back, I'm not sure how much research you guys did. I played with a lot of pros, you know, that came out. I probably played out of 15 of us. We had probably about 9 of us that went pro, and a few were still playing basketball. You know, the shooting guard, when I came in, I thought I was going to get some starting time. Shooting guard by the name of Jamar Smith, who had 1 year in the league, and he's over in Germany right now, you know, in the big leagues. And I had to sit on the bench for 2 years. And Rodney Watson actually didn't recruit me. You know, I came in recruited under Rick Curtis, and he ended up, the school went up through some violations, and he got, you know, dismissed. And Rodney Watson came in, and luckily he was from Illinois, so he was a little familiar with me. And he came in with his players. You know, he played his players at first, but over time, you know, just perseverance and just working hard, you know, he understood that I wanted to stay there and be a part of the team. And he passed me the torch, you know, my junior year, and I took it from there. And I just playing with pros, I understood the work ethic and the tactics that I need, and I just perfected my craft. And, you know, like I say, I'm a testament of hard work right now.
No doubt about it. And, of course, you know, by that hard work and perseverance, I mean, your senior year, I believe, what, you had a, you know, season high of 30 points at Ohio, against Ohio Dominican, and, you know, you ended your last game with 23 points in the NCAA Division II Midwest region. So, you know, you definitely led by example in it. And it says a lot. It says a lot about you, and it says a lot about where you are going, because, as you're saying, I mean, it's not going to happen right out the gate. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of guys want to play, you know, everybody, you know, feels that they can play Division I, and justifiably so. But Division II is no shabby task either. I mean, there are some tough teams in the Division II level.
Yes, and that's definitely true. And I think players really get a feel for that. You know, D1, D2, you understand the differences in college ball, but once you get to a level where everybody's on a similar playing field, like a Las Vegas or the pros, like, some of those resumes go out the window. So now we're on an even playing field. I understand that you might have been at Indiana University, but, you know, this is Las Vegas, and we're both fighting for a job. And, you know, Division II, like you say, you're going against – I don't think there's a big difference with Division II and Division I guards. I feel like those guys are pretty much on the same level. And as far as competing, I think the bigs are the big difference as far as D1 and Division II. But, you know, it's just a great transition. We have great players on there. Some of the great scores come from there, you know, from little schools and small schools. There's NAIA All-Americans, and those are the guys that you see are getting these jobs, you know, and they're used to having the ball in their hand because, you know, it's a deep Division II is putting it in your hand and making plays. You know, Division I sometimes is more team-oriented and system basketball, but it's just where you grew up at and understanding that everybody's going to get their shot, you know, and I just hope that I'm ready when my shot comes. Not sure if it came yet, but, you know, I'm just working hard every day. And I put resumes aside, you know, I'm working hard. So when I do run into a guy with that type of resume, you know, I'm ready to compete.
Brandon Hogg joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Brandon, how much have you had to in essence, almost be your own marketing company and a marketing major and market yourself to these teams and these leagues?
I actually, you know, coming out of my area, I'm pretty much the first out of my area to achieve at this standard to the pro level. And it's rough. You know, I give that to guys. You know, sometimes they say, people say it's who you know. And it can make the road a lot easier. And I'm in a situation now where I don't have an agent. I don't have many guys to lean on. So I have to work on film and I have to go to events. You know, even after 2 years of pro, I have to go to Las Vegas and still get exposure and talk to coaches and, you know, put my face out there and name out there. And you are your own brand. You're the CEO of you. So, I mean, nobody's going to do it. You have to push yourself. And, you know, you just stay positive. It's a mentality. It's a battle. You know, it's a struggle. You know, if you don't have the connects and the guys that just put you in good position and situations, you just have to keep working hard and just, you know, just have that faith that a door is going to open up and just make sure that you're always ready when that phone call comes.
Brandon, what advice would you have for maybe a good high school basketball player or possibly somebody in college now to get them ready to try to get to the level where you've played in Europe and played professionally?
Just understand it takes time. You know, guys are, they want that instant gratification, and they put all the work in, and it might not come, you know, that first year. Like, if you see my stats, like, I averaged maybe like 2 points my freshman year, sophomore year, maybe seven, and I just jumped up to like 16 in 1 year, and it was just, it wasn't the fact that I wasn't good enough. It just wasn't my time yet. And you know, once that time came, I was ready to step right in. Like you said, I started the season off with 30 points, and it was just like, that was just, you know, saying a reminder that, you know, I have it. And once that confidence kicked in, you know, just sticking with it, just sticking with the hard times, and, you know, understand that it's going to be an up and down battle, you know, as far as the pro, and just perfect your craft as much as you can, and don't get too low. You know, just always stay positive. You never know who's watching, and you never know, you know, who's going to reach out to you with a connect. But just always stay positive and work hard. And, you know, that's a dream, you know what I'm saying? That's what you want to do. You have to be about it. You have to wake up every day and go hard and work on it, get the shots up, and just carry yourself as a pro. Some certain things just shouldn't happen. Being eligible shouldn't happen. Missing games shouldn't happen, you know. You're a pro. If you want to carry yourself as a pro, you approach the game as a pro.
Brandon Hogg, thank you so much for your time and insight tonight. It was great to get to meet you in Las Vegas at the Global Basketball Summer League, and you do have a very nice game, so best of luck to you in the future, and keep me posted on where you're at.
Yes, we'll definitely. Good luck.
Will do. I appreciate you guys. Good talk.
All right, Brandon Hogg calling in tonight from the STL, the St. Louis area. Brandon Hogg, good words of wisdom for anybody looking to continue playing basketball post-college.
Yeah, you know, Brandon really emphasized, you know, the fact of mastering your craft. And, you know, that's something that I always say, you know, as a coach is to, you know, you perfect your craft. Don't say that, you know, you want something and you're not willing to put those extra hours and not willing to put the extra time in. And at some point, you have to be patient, you know, because, you know, it may not come right now. But somewhere down the road, if you continue to do what you need to do, I mean, man, that was awesome, Brandon. You know, great words of wisdom for these guys who are listening, and hopefully hopefully he'll follow through, and I know that he'll do some great things down the road.
That was Big Time Guest number one, and definitely stay tuned after the break. Big Time Guest number two coming up from the Seattle area, Jessamyn McIntyre of 710 ESPN Seattle. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd, show 63.
Man, just a great show right out the gate. And, of course, Brandon Hogg, our first guest, you know, kind of giving us that insight on what it takes, the perseverance on getting to the next level. And, of course, you had a chance to spend time with him down in Vegas. Great young man with a strong vision, and definitely know that he's going to make it.
Yeah, it was great. I got to interview him a time or two down there and also just have some personal chat time with him and figure out what it was like. And that's what I was asking him here on the show, is what it was like to go from a D2 school to see if you can still make it in basketball and have a professional career. And he's done so for 2 years.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned that point, because, you know, when I talk about making it, I he's already made it. I mean, he's made it into professional ranks playing in Europe. And, you know, it just determines on how far he wants to take it. I mean, a lot of people play European basketball, and some make, you know, decent money. Some make okay money. But then there are also those players in the upper echelon that can wind up making an honest living at the in the European sector. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the NBA. It could be Europe, you know, Greece, Turkey, wherever it is. But make sure that you're, you know, doing the best that you can. And, you know, that to me is success. I mean, he is already having it playing at the professional level.
Absolutely. And it goes back to what Daryl Reshaw, the executive director of Global Basketball, had to say when he was on our show about a month ago. And that is, guys can make anywhere from $1,500 a month on the low end up to $500,000 if they're that, you know, star player. So there, as you just said, there could be a lot of ways and a lot of options to have a career and make good money outside of the U.S.
And yeah, and you can be also be like Daryl Reshaw and you know, and parlay that into something, you know, to where you're the director and you're running your own leagues and running your own, you know, tournaments and, you know, making some great money in it that, you know, that way as well.
Sean, while we're talking a little bit of basketball after having Brandon Hogg on with us, looks like the sale of the Clippers is finally going to happen.
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming, you know, and Donald Sterling has been blocking this at every turn. I think that it came to a strong point this week when Doc Rivers had mentioned and, you know, and Chris Paul, for that matter, you know, a player saying that, hey, if things don't happen here soon, then, you know, there's a chance that I might sit out, you know, and when you're talking about, you know, executives and coaches and players all saying the same thing, it becomes a real, real tough road to hoe. And, of course, Steve Ballmer and his money, he was saying, look, man, in order for me to do, you know, to keep this team afloat, you know, we're going to have to, you know, come to some type of an agreement here that you're going to relinquish the team. Otherwise, it loses its value. So, you know, yeah, it came to a head. I believe that it took a little too long to make this decision, but it is what it is, and I'm glad that all sides are moving forward, and you know, good luck to the Clippers.
Let's go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Jessamine McIntyre, the executive producer up in Seattle at 710 ESPN Seattle. Jessamine, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks, Sean and John. I appreciate it.
So, Jessamine, thanks for being on the show here. And, of course, you are a busy person. Of course, you know, with the being on 710 ESPN and, of course, preparing for the Pac-12. Of course, the Washington State Cougars. You do sideline reporting for them. And what's it looking like this year in the Palouse?
Well, I think that we're looking at a team that's going to be much improved, but a record that's probably going to be around the same. As you know, the Pac-12, specifically the North Division, is just going to be as tough as ever. And, I mean, the strength of the division is ultimately going to be a good thing for Washington State at the end, but this is only Coach Leach's third year, and he's still cycling through, getting his own recruits through. And, you know, they obviously have Connor Halliday, a quarterback, taking over for his second year as the full-time starter, but they have lost some depth at that position as well.
So you mentioned Coach Leach, and, of course, you know, going through the lean years, the first couple of years, there are a couple of players that showed a little bit of discontent as far as his coaching style, and that kind of follows Coach Leach wherever he's been, even with Texas Tech. But what is it like now? What is the temperament, you know, in the locker room? Does he have full control? What is the vibe there in Cougarland?
Well, I do think that as with any coaching program, when you do have a new regime take over, there's going to be that whole buy-in phase. And what Coach Leach had to do, it was cycle through the guys that were going to buy in and the ones that weren't. And he comes from an old school style of coaching. That's really what it is. And in day of social media and a modern era where we can have access to 18-year-olds every waking thought, you know, every moment of the day, you're going to hear a lot more discontent than you would in the past, even should the same level of discontent be there on the team. So I think that just with the high-level exposure when it comes to Division I football specifically, plus his old-school style of coaching, it comes off a lot rougher than it is. I think that the team that's out there has bought in, and if not, they wouldn't be here. You've seen, you know, you saw a decent amount of defection in his first two seasons, and now you've got a team that's almost full of his own hand-picked guys. So I think that the mentality of the team is the best it's been since, you know, he took over. Obviously, you know, there were Paul Wolf guys that were on the team before, probably not very happy with the fact that the coach that recruited them got fired. And, you know, there's a lack of security there, too. When you come in, this guy didn't handpick you. He didn't want you to come to this school. So that whole thing is almost kind of cycled out of that program. So the guys that are there, they want to be there. They wouldn't be there if they didn't want to play for Coach Leach.
Jessamine, how much do you think the upgrades to the facilities, the athletic department, and Martin Stadium are going to help to attract better players to Wazoo?
I think we're seeing that across the conference as a whole, to tell you the truth, but it's a Bill Moose signature to do that. He comes from the Oregon tree of administrators, and so he knows exactly what he's doing. And all in all, it's going to attract more boosters to continue being able to maintain that kind of upgrade new stadium feel. And it's going to attract bigger students. Unfortunately, though, you're in the same conference as Oregon. You're in the same conference as Stanford's and USC and UCLA, other schools that have a lot of means. What they're doing is keeping up with the rest of them. I don't think that they're necessarily going above and beyond, but they're certainly not being behind. They're not behind the times. They're not rinky-dink Little Pullman anymore. They're a serious program, much like Oregon, kind of sitting in the middle of nowhere where the school is the only attraction. And I think that because Bill does come from the Oregon tree, he'll model themselves after that. And eventually, as more talent does come, and, you know, the football program itself and their record will finally start to resemble that as well.
Switching to the pro team in the Northwest, the Seattle Seahawks, of course, coming off the Super Bowl championship. 3 days of training camp under their belt, a day off today. Are the players happy to be back on the field in the shores of Lake Washington there in Renton?
Yes, those players are the most competitive bunch of athletes I've ever been around on any level of any sport. It's crazy. It's funny, you talk to Earl Thomas, who's kind of known to be the most competitive guy on that team. He just couldn't wait. He couldn't believe it. You know, minicamp wasn't even enough for him. He was bummed to leave minicamp and not be able to play just because of the regulations. And he's hilarious. And you saw that competitive edge when there was that fight out at minicamp. You had Richard Sherman and Phil Bates going back and forth at each other. Earl actually told us that Doug Baldwin texted him his address. Texted Earl his address after the scuffle, being like, you meet me there.
And
it was funny afterwards, you know, it's just their level of play on the field, and everyone was fine with it afterwards. Bates and Sherman were even mocking replaying their fight after that. So it just tells you the kind of edge that these guys have. Everyone's happy to be back out there.
Jessamyn McIntyre joining us here on the double. And, of course, Jessamyn, there is one particular player that isn't in camp right now. I want to get your take on that, talking about Marshawn Lynch holding out. Of course, he's still under contract. And, you know, what's the vibe like there in Seattle? I know that Coach Pete Carroll is, you know, kind of keeping it steady as he goes. But it has to be somewhat of a cramp in the style. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's not Pete Carroll's way of going about things, but Marshawn Lynch doesn't really fit into anyone's mold necessarily. He's a unique guy, and he's kind of always done things differently. We did talk to John Schneider on Friday as we opened camp, and his message, although not in these exact words, were, you know what, we got to do what we got to do. He did tell us that he had a plan in place. They've had a plan in place since he took over there as the GM of the team, and he's not straying from that. He wants Marshawn to be a part of it, but if he's not going to be a part of it, then they're ready to go with Kristen Michael and Robert Turbin. And they do have a lot of faith in those guys. So there's a lot of maturing that they had gone through throughout this offseason. So those guys are kind of ready. It's a very next man up mentality. That's not to say that they don't want to do it without Marshawn, though.
No doubt about it. And so do you believe that the Seahawks have done enough in the offseason to, you know, to secure themselves to get right back into the Super Bowl?
I do think that they have set themselves as a favorite once again. Unfortunately, the NFC West is slowly, or very quickly, I should say, turned from one of the weakest to the strongest division in the NFL. So they're going to beat each other up in this division. I think it'll be a tight race. I still think that they have the upper hand to win the division. But for them, when it comes to Marshawn Lynch and what they have to do with this team is plan even more for the future. They paid Richard, they paid Earl, they paid Cam the year before, and now they have to start thinking about their quarterback. And although we have been seeing some creative things done with contracts recently, with Colin Kaepernick being the prime example with a de-escalator put in there, it's not to say that they would necessarily want to do that with Russell Wilson, and they do have to think about locking him up because all is said and done, you know you're going to pay that man.
Yeah, you know, so the Seahawks front office has done a great job in developing a lot of young players and molding them. And, of course, Pete Carroll doing an awesome job in molding these players and putting them in the right position. You talked about Richard Sherman and his contract. Was that the best thing for the Seahawks to actually have a contract like that? Because we're looking at the trickle down, and it looks like there might be a couple of casualties in the next year or so, especially with Russell Wilson coming up with a contract year next year.
Well, I do think that they have a very strong plan in place when it comes to financials. They have some guys who are very, very well-versed in that beyond anything that I could come close to. So I think they trust their money guys, I guess you can say, their salary cap guys. But what is the best part about that for the Seahawks is getting that Richard Sherman contract done and getting Earl's done at the same time. Those two are extremely competitive. They're like brothers. And to have one done and one not, or both of them come up on contract years at the same time, would have been a huge distraction for this team. And I think it could have gone poorly. Richard Sherman is never going to back off the statement that he is the best corner in the NFL. And he is the best corner in the NFL, except that when you bring that to, you know, a very vocal guy who's going to talk about these things into the offseason, it could get messy, and you don't need that for this team. So I think the best thing for them to do was to get that contract, in addition to Earl Thomas has done this offseason. But there will be some casualties. I think it might come out of maybe their linebacker core. I think that you might run into a situation where you'd ask guys to take a little bit of a salary hit to stay here. I have heard from the past talking to different team sources that the core of this team wants to go into the Ring of Honor together. Not the whole thing. They want to go into the Seahawks Ring of Honor together, so they plan to be here together. And I think that they're going to do whatever it takes necessary to stay together, at least the major players on the team.
Jessamyn McIntyre joining us of 710 ESPN Seattle, the executive producer. And Jessamyn, as the executive producer, give listeners an idea of what your job entails. You're behind the scenes. Everybody knows the hosts and the faces of the station. What do you do behind the scenes?
Well, I don't know if you know, but we recently expanded our lineup. We now start at 7 a.m. with Brock and Salk in the morning. We have Michael Gray from 10 a.m. to noon, Bob and Graz noon to 3, and then we have Danny, Dave, and Moore, and that's from 3 to 7 every day. We also maintain our partnerships with the Seahawks, the Mariners, and Washington State Athletics. So I help to cultivate and maintain the relationships with our partners. I also help our program director, Mike Salk, make decisions when it comes to hiring talent, working with talent. We have a lot of guys on our station who did not start out in radio. We have Jim Moore, who was a writer, Dave Wyman, who was a player, Brock Heward, who was a player, Danny O'Neill, who was a writer. And what we do is we work with those guys to make them into the best radio talent that we can. And that's a large part of my job as well. I also maintain schedules, make sure everybody's getting their vacation time in, you know, that boring office stuff. But, hey, somebody's got to do that, too. But I majorly oversee all programming in addition to daily producing Bob and Graz at this point.
Let me ask one new lineup question, if I may. You've got Michael Gray solo 10 to noon, yet three guys in the afternoon. Was that Gray wanting to be by himself, or did you think of maybe moving one of the three to be paired with Gray? How did that happen and come about for you?
Well, there's a couple things that are by design when it comes to that. Michael Gray came from doing a show by himself before we hired him out here, so that was a natural medium for him. Since his show is only 2 hours, it gives us some flexibility to move him around should we need to. In the case that someone else might be out, he could do a two-hour show and then possibly move on to another show and do that as well. It's a very comfortable for him, and he's a very talented radio guy. He is one of the only guys who started in radio that we have on our station. So for us, he was getting a little bit lost in the afternoon because we had the deep personalities in Jim Moore and Dave Wyman. So giving him that space by himself and being one of the newer personalities here in Seattle, he now has room to grow in that role, and it's kind of the best situation for him and therefore for us. So we looked at it as basically playing to the strengths of everyone. Jim and Dave had been staples in the afternoon, and before we hired Michael Gray, Danny actually was basically auditioning with us as a fill-in host and worked the best with Jim and Dave. So it's kind of more of a format for an afternoon show to have more voices in there as well. And a 10 to noon slot is more suited for a solo host.
Now, Jessamine, you've been in radio a long time and sports radio a long time. What are some of your fondest memories, favorite moments?
Oh, well, I started out at ESPN in Bristol, and I had worked on every show that was there. At the time, Dan Patrick was there, and I got to work on his show for a solid 6 months before he left. And I was only 24 at the time. I was young. I was new. And he gave me some of the best advice ever. And it was, don't be just another cute chick. And I kind of looked at him almost ready to be insulted. And he's like, you've got the ability to be more than that, but you're going to get away with stuff being a cute chick. Don't do it. You're better than that. And you've got a lot of talent. Don't let people treat you like a cute chick. And it resonated. It was such a simple sentence, and it resonated so much with me because he was telling me that he believed in what I could do. And, you know, obviously there's a lot made of women in this, in sports media lately, but, you know, as much of the negative we can get the positive benefits too, but some of those positive benefits are people don't expect you to work as hard. And when Dan Patrick told me he expected me to work my butt off, I couldn't appreciate that more. So that was one of my fondest memories of working there.
Now, Jessamine, there is obviously there in the press or in the media the past couple of days on ESPN First Take, of course, Stephen A. Smith had made a statement that was very controversial to one Michelle Beadle. And, you know, it just sounds like there are two different languages sometimes that comes out. Do you find out that that happens more often than not? In the industry, especially, you know, when someone such as yourself being the hardest, you seem like the hardest working woman in the business right now with everything that you do. But do you see that there is that disconnect in languages sometimes?
I think that there is the lack of thinking before you speak sometimes. And I would say that the majority of the people that I'm around and that I work with, I don't think that there is that disconnect in languages. I think that when it comes to these heated issues, people try to take a stand and they don't think hard enough about what they're going to say and what the implications are going to be. I don't agree with what Stephen A. was saying. I think I understand the point he was trying to get at, but he ultimately said, you know, ladies, you know, don't make him hate you. And it's just the most ridiculous thing ever. And I can't, in the same sentence he's saying how he was raised by such a strong woman with strong women in his family, I just, there's no way that he could have respect for women in his family and actually think what came out of his mouth. I think the disconnect was there within Stephen A. himself, not necessarily him and anyone else. I don't think that brain-to-mouth function went right, because I think he is as loud and gregarious as he can be. He's a smart guy, and I think if he heard himself say that before it actually went out on the air, he wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that, you know, he was on TV today and, you know, backtracked a little bit and was very apologetic. And, you know, you have to think before you speak. And in this industry, this is an industry for everybody. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we as men can probably say some crazy things and, you know, and then in retrospect go, gosh, what in the world just happened? And so, yeah, I know it's probably. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There's definitely. No, that's okay. I was just going to follow up on that, there's always going to be that locker room mentality. The thing is that I have been around it since the beginning of my career, and I mean, I won't say that I have a thick skin, because nothing necessarily extremely insulting has ever been said in my presence. It's goofy, and I get it, and you kind of have to get that kind of, you know, joking around and everything. It doesn't have to be very, very crass, and I think that people know the line with me where they can joke around and not, and I have a thick skin, and I'm not going to get too upset, but I'm never going to put myself in a situation that, even if I'm comfortable in, would be insulting to other women, if that makes sense. So
yeah, yeah.
There is, you know, there's a certain amount that guys, I think, should be expected to be comfortable with. You know, you can talk about this or that and don't have to, you know, PC everything up just because of woman's presence, because at that point it becomes insulting to a woman.
Most definitely. Jessamine McIntyre, thanks for being here on The Double with the Double S Express. You can catch Jessamine on 17 ESPN, executive producer, also sidelines coordinator with the Washington State Cougars. Jessamine, again, thank you for being on The Double with the Double S Express.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jessamine McIntyre, thank you for your time. You can follow her at Jessamine ESPN on Twitter, 710sports.com, for all of your 710 ESPN Seattle needs.
Man, that was awesome. Jessamine, you know, telling it like it is. And you know it is. It's a very tough industry, you know, to actually get into, period. And, of course, she has some strong mentors along the way, just, you know, explaining to her to, you know, to tough it up, roll up your sleeves, and, you know, don't take any mess, pretty much. And so, you know, Jessamine, like I explained earlier, I think she is one of the hardest working women in the business. And so, you know, all the things that she said that she does, all the shows and lineups that she puts into place. Should have put a plug in, Sean Wally, because I'd love for the Double S Express to be on 710 ESPN at some point. But yeah, I'm sure that that's something that we can work on in the future, my friend.
Wishful thinking. Keep the dream alive.
So, yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk more sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally. Show's number 63 in the books, almost. Two great guests on the show. Of course, we had guest number one, Brandon Hogg, playing European basketball extraordinaire, and got a chance to be with Sean Wally down there in Vegas with a couple interviews and great show today. And of course, guest number two, Jessamyn McIntyre of 710 ESPN and of Washington State University fame, sideline reporter. Great show thus far, Sean Wally.
Man, you know, we just try to continue to bring the insight, bring good guests that have good experiences and can share that here on the show.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, with Brandon, you know, the struggles that he had talked about earlier about making it into the NBA and then just making it into professional basketball. Of course, a 6'1 point guard. And, you know, let's face it, when it comes to point guards or when it comes to guards, period, 6'1", kind of seems like it's a dime a dozen. He's done an awesome job on putting himself on the map and doing some great things. And, of course, wishing him the best in that. And, of course, Jessamyn, you know, what can I say? I mean, I was thoroughly impressed with having her on the show. And, of course, the things that she's doing, it seems like she just, you know, is constantly busy keeping herself motivated, keeping herself working, coming from Bristol all the way to Seattle and doing some awesome things as well. And, you know, just talk a little bit about some of the obstacles that she's had to overcome to get to where she's gotten to today.
Yeah, she really is, as you've coined her, one of the hardest working women in sports broadcasting. And you look at her resume and her pedigree going back to ESPN headquarters, ESPN Radio. And she mentioned Dan Patrick as one of her early mentors, and she made the move across the country to start ESPN 710 in Seattle, and now she's the executive producer and doing good things with the station as well as Cougar football. So good things happen to people that work hard, and she's proof.
Yeah, and you know, talking about the barriers of overcoming, you know, being a female and having those types of barriers, and one of the things that she had mentioned that hit home to me was is you know, I can't remember if she said Dan Patrick said don't be another pretty face, but somebody told her don't be another pretty face. And I'm thinking, wow, what, you know, that is very bold to say. But at the same time, you know, that is the way that, you know, most people think, you know, when they're, you know, watching sports. And, you know, she's definitely not just a pretty face. She's awesome in what she's doing. And Jessamyn, if you're still listening, you know, keep up the great work. And, you know, there's an awesome horizon, you know, for her in this industry.
Absolutely. And both of our guests tonight give good ideas on what it takes to get to that next level in sports and in broadcasting. And hopefully that's what we're attaining to be and get to. And that's what a lot of our listeners and young student athletes hopefully are trying to get to, is be the best they can be. And with our, through our guests, we're hopefully trying to give them a pathway and motivation to do that.
Yeah, it's not easy, Sean. You know, all the preparation and everything that we put into it. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that we do to make sure that we are putting a great show. And of course, having a great team that we have as well that produces On the Double with the Double S Express. And so, yeah, there is. There's a lot of groundwork in that. But at the same time, there's such a joy in bringing the best sports.
So, Sean, did you rush out and repurchase your LeBron James number 23 Cavalier jersey that actually you really could have dusted off from about four and a half years ago.
Yeah. Oh, you talk about LeBron being LeBron. And, you know, at one point, you know, I thought he said that, you know, the reason why he wasn't going to be number 23 anymore was in homage to Michael Jordan, because no one should be number 23. But here we are, LeBron going back to Cleveland, and he is donning number 23. Go figure.
23, like I'm assuming his idol, Michael.
Yeah, that's exactly what who I'm talking about. And of course, you know, LeBron saying that no one should wear that number because of Michael Jordan. And, you know, then again, here he is, you know, and I don't know. There are a lot of things being said on why he's wearing number 23. I think 2 times 3, of course, is 6. And that was the jersey that he wore, you know, in Miami. And, you know, he could be paying a little bit of homage to the Miami Heat by doing this and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. I don't know, you know, but it is what it is. You know, he is the greatest player, I feel. And, you know, he can do whatever he wants to do. And I think that he will definitely cement his legacy by winning an NBA championship in Cleveland.
And we talked at length previously on a different show with one of our big-time guests. Wow, why is his name leaving me at this point? Paul Sunderland. And yeah, about the Lakers, and they now have a new coach.
Yeah, so Byron Scott is the new head coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, and it has taken – I don't know why it's taken so long, Sean. This was their guy a long time ago. You know, time waits for no one, and, you know, and when it comes to, you know, getting all your ducks in a row and producing and putting a good product out on the floor, even though Kobe Bryant says he's satisfied with some of the moves or satisfied with the moves that the Lakers have made, I'm not sure they made enough. And, you know, and again, Byron Scott being hired this late, he's going to have to scramble. They're already in, you know, summer league is come and gone. And, you know, we're going to have, you know, the NBA season here in no time. So Byron's going to have to put together a solid product. I just don't think it's enough time.
Yeah, time is definitely not on the side of a coach that comes in basically in August. And what, training camp and preseason starts October?
Yeah, you know, you're talking about putting a lot of emphasis on Kobe Bryant, and I believe Kobe's going to have a great year. He's got a lot to prove. I'm sure he's chomping at the bit, tired of seeing LeBron James this, LeBron James that, and, you know, wants to make his staple again in the NBA, no pun intended. But, you know, yeah, I just think it's a lot of pressure put on Kobe, and, you know, to have a coaching staff that's coming in so late in the game.
Basketball, football. Ball, a little bit of baseball talk. Of course, the Athletics are trying to run away with the West as usual. The Angels trying to keep pace and make a few trades here and there. The Mariners reacquired Kendrys Morales. So the Wild Wild West continues.
Yeah, so as we speak, I mean, the Houston Astros are putting a thumping on the Oakland A's right now, 7-3, top of the ninth. So that looks like that might be an L for the Oakland A's. You know, 2 games up on the Los Angeles Angels, and you'd mentioned, you know, the adjustments that, you know, the three teams are making. You know, the Mariners are slowly on the decline there. I think about 11 games out, you know, but more importantly, they're about 2 games out of the wild card. So, you know, making the proper adjustments is so crucial for Seattle right now to keep pace in this wild card.
Well, yeah, definitely the wild card is what the Mariners need to be gunning for and try to maintain pace and gain that ground back. And right now the rumor out of Marinerville or MLB trade rumor land is that Seattle's inquiring on the Dodgers' Matt Kemp. So We'll see if anything materializes here in the next 3-4 days with the trading deadline Thursday.
Yeah, Matt Kemp, you talk about a strong addition to, you know, the Mariners outfield. That would be excellent. It would add a lot of veteranism. And, of course, you know, it is well documented that Matt Kemp is not happy in Los Angeles and would like to leave. And I think it'd be a great place for Matt to wind up in Seattle.
I think it's kind of funny that people are dogging Matt Kemp because he's only hitting 272 so far this year. The average in the outfield for the Mariners is about 250. So 272 sounds a lot better at Safeco Field.
Yeah, and you got to look at, look at what he can bring to Seattle. So when he's standing in the batter's box, a pitcher is going to think twice before they think about it, even remotely putting that ball over the plate. There's going to be, a lot of guesswork involved, and something tells me he'll, get walked quite a bit. That's if any of this materialized. But, right now it's just speculation, and, if the Mariners did get Matt Kemp, that would be an added bonus, no doubt.
Well, Sean, show 63. Time to wrap it up. A big time thank you to Brandon Hogg. You can follow him on Twitter at Mr_Underrated. And Jessamyn McIntyre at Jessamyn ESPN.
Man, show 63. We are moving right along, man. And, of course, bringing big time guests week in and week out. It's been another fun one, Sean.
Absolutely. And by the time we have our 64th show, the trading deadline in the Major League Baseball will have passed, and we'll know if any big moves were made for your favorite team, and we'll be another week closer to the NFL season.
Yeah, so this is the last Sunday. This past Sunday was the last Sunday, as you had mentioned earlier, before we go through 6 months of Sundays for NFL football, man. I am excited. Very, very, very excited for the NFL season.
Well, Sean, before we say goodbye, this coming Saturday, a big day in Canton, as Seattle Seahawks fans, the 12th man, will know, the second Seahawk goes into the Hall of Fame, and that is one Walter Jones, one of the greatest left tackles ever to play the game.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to mention Ray Guy, the greatest punter to ever play in the NFL, Oakland Raider Hall of Famer. Going in.
That's your job as the silver and black member.
Well, yeah, so Walter Jones definitely being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, for me, Ray Guy going in, the first punter to ever go into the Hall of Fame. He is definitely the best to ever play the game at that position. So kudos to both. Kudos to the Pacific Northwest, Walter Jones, down here in Northern California, Ray Guy. So that's going to do it. Show number 63 in the book, Sean Wally. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd. Don Newsom, the producer. You have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.